Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. It is Thursday morning, July the 14th, 2022. And I have a very special guest this morning who I've certainly been aware of for many years, but never had the honor, privilege, opportunity to talk with. And that is...
blah, 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 blah.
There he is. That's Greg Swanson, who lives in Switzerland and has been very much an important part of the conversation of the atrocities inflicted on Americans abroad over the years. And he joins me this morning to add to his discussion. So how are you today, Greg?
Doing very well. How's the weather in Toronto?
It is going to be a very hot, humid day in Toronto.
Very good.
People have this crazy image that Canada's cold. It's not, and the summers in Toronto are intolerable, I can tell you.
Kind of like the U.S. tax system.
You know, actually, that is a good point, a good moment to launch. Greg, what is it you don't like about the U.S. tax system?
Oh, where do I start, John? I don't think you have enough time on this. No, but thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity. I know we have kind of a pretty interesting subject for the audience today, I think. And it would be good while I'm talking through it to get your feedback on it as well, because you have more of a legal and historic viewpoint than I do. So, you know, I think what we could have is something that at least is a basis for discussion. And hopefully you see it the same way. Maybe we can do something with it.
Well, I think, Greg, my impression is that you and I both agree that the whole U.S. extraterritorial tax regime is a very bad thing. Do we agree on that?
I would put it more like it sucks.
Well,
maybe that's how I learned it.
You're in marketing, aren't you? I'm a lawyer. You're in marketing. You're used to one word answers. I have to explain
exactly myself.
Exactly. By God, between the two of us, we'll get there.
Oh, it's dangerous, us two together. That's for sure.
Okay. You know, I think to understand why it sucks, and it does. All right. I think it might be helpful if you're willing to tell us a little about yourself and how in God's name did your life evolve so you were sitting in Switzerland talking to somebody in Canada about something that affects people all over the world?
Yeah. How did I do that?
The beginning.
Well, I grew up in Oklahoma. I was born in Colorado. I grew up in Oklahoma. And while I was in Oklahoma, I studied international business. I ended up trying to follow my dream. Actually, under the guidance of the then governor of Oklahoma, who said we need to develop international trade and stuff like that. But I ended up in Germany and worked for large American corporations for many, many years. And I've been abroad now since 1988. So I've been, Ronald Reagan was president when I moved. But I've been attached to the U.S. pretty closely by working for American companies and also working globally as well. But, you know, if I put a little mission to my background, is really to try to help our trade deficit, to get us to export more, to learn how to do more business abroad. And I've done business. I sat down one day and I calculated that where I've done business is more like 30, 35 countries. So I have a pretty extensive international background. I was doing something that I felt was for the country. Helped the country. I worked for Kodak in the mid-90s and exported a ton of stuff that was built in Rochester, New York, close to where you are. And, I really felt that I was doing something that would help the U.S. And then pretty soon, and just to finish the story in the tax side of it, I moved to Switzerland. In my job or my company moved me to Switzerland. And as soon as that happened, my whole life, I had the aha moment about the tax system and not able to get bank accounts. And I just, the whole time I was going, how can my government do this to me? You know, and then from there on, it went into a ton of different things that happened to me that just limited my life and my kids too. So that's a little bit of the story there. But, and now I'm working on my own. I'm a consultant with digital transformation. I work with life science companies, mainly large ones. I can't expand it because of the tax laws. You know, I don't want to be a CFC. That would probably put me out of business right away with the form 5471.
Sure would. Sure would.
And so, you know, you're kind of stuck. Just to, you know, give you a little bit of introduction about what I did, I started looking at the history of this whole thing. And through that, I found the law that we'll talk about today. But there was a lot of other things that I found in that. And a lot with our messaging and some of the other things I think we could probably learn a lot from. So if there's a legal basis for us to grab onto, fantastic. If not, we need to probably, as a group, learn a little bit about messaging, because I don't think RBT really works anymore. I don't think anybody gets it. I think there's a zillion different definitions of it. And there's different organizations using it in different ways, which I also don't like. But we need to get our act together as far as our messaging and make it more relatable to the American public. And that's where my marketing comes in. So, you know, I look forward to this discussion with you now.
Well, you just sit around, you know, for probably a month of discussions with all that. But, you know, let me just zero in on a couple of things here. I mean, you know, you made the point, I think, very well, upside down, sideways, diagonally, that it's very difficult to live as a U.S. citizen outside the United States. So, I mean, we would certainly agree with that. I know that, you know, that you've taken a lot of initiatives over the years. I remember was it purpleexpat.org?
PurpleExpat, yeah.
You know, I mean, that was a very good sort of informational site, and I've seen your tweets over the years, and you know, they definitely are from a marketer. I mean, you know, they're good. I mean, you know, you've definitely mastered the art of getting a message out in a couple of words, all right, you know, which is really, really great. And I think a lot of people would do well, you know, perhaps to emulate that. But let's focus for a second on the last thing you were talking about, which was you know, so the problem is the citizenship-based taxation, meaning that the U.S. Makes it, you know, the tax code is written so that any U.S. citizen is subject to the U.S. tax code wherever they live in the world. And you had said that basically the problem with defining this is we've got to get to RBT is that means different things to different people, et cetera. And so it confuses the message. And I agree with you very, very much on that. Could you perhaps provide some examples of how, when people say, well, we need RBT, they're really not talking about the same thing?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that the definition of RBT is kind of, somebody stole a marketing term and said, okay, what we're doing is RBT. Oh, we're going to raise the foreign earned income exclusion, or we're going to, whatever it is, it's not fixing the problem. And, you know, if you go back in our history, you know, we used to have an unlimited foreign earned income exclusion at one time. But then somebody got a wild hair and decided to change that. So, you know, and we could talk a little bit about that because that was back in the Kennedy administration.
Yeah,
so
I think that's right. Well, why don't we talk about that now, actually, yeah. You know, since you mentioned it, that is also my understanding of the history. And the, you know, the Kennedy administration, you know, did some extraordinarily damaging things to Americans abroad. I mean, one was the, what you would call the reduction of the foreign earned income. In other words, you know, not all foreign income was excludable. But the second thing is, and make no mistake about it, the subpart F.
Subpart F. I thought you were going to say it.
Yeah, well, it's because it's true and it's obvious, okay?
You know, John, when I read through it and I read through the comments, you know, that were coming out of the Kennedy administration back then, and it seems that the Kennedy family had a lot of, call them Hollywood elite types, as friends. And they had a couple of people that they knew that went off to Monaco and lived in a low tax country and used unlimited foreign earned income exclusion to avoid US taxation. And that pissed them off. And so there was a couple examples, and this is what we see the whole history. One or two examples of something happens, and then they'll change the law and make our lives miserable. And in that particular case, it was a couple of movie stars that were taking advantage of the situation, and the Kennedys were furious about it. The other thing that I noticed about the Kennedy administration, you can chime in on this too, is the Kennedy administration saw anybody making money outside of the U.S. was bad, unless they were, you know, they got a cut. But anybody bringing money into the United States was good. So that led us to later on having the tax benefits for foreigners to bring money into the United States. And then one or two Americans renouncing their citizenship to take advantage of that. So that outraged them, and it just, throughout the media, all Americans abroad are just a bunch of tax cheating rich people, spoiled elites that are, you know, living in Monaco and, you know, sunning themselves while they're counting the money that they're cheating the U.S. from. And that's the message that went out, and that stuck. It stuck through the 70s. It sticks today. It's still the rhetoric. But what Kennedy didn't really ever think about is there's a school teacher in China, or there's a woman like maybe you know and I know in Brussels with two autistic kids with a leaky roof living on welfare. They're Americans, and that's the majority of them. But no, they think, no, they're all elites. They're all rich. They're all, you know, just spoiled people. And they're living abroad. We don't know what they're doing. So let's get them. And that's kind of the message.
If you were to generalize, you know, the theme or the idea, and this is, I think, prevalent. I mean, I think it was particularly public, obvious, and prevalent in the Kennedy years. Okay. But I think it's generally been true, is that basically, as a matter of policy and mindset and outlook, the United States is extremely upset that anything exists that's outside its tax jurisdiction.
Right.
I mean, this is really upsetting. And that explains why it's great to have things come to the United States, because that's code for now we can tax it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Bad for it's people not
always,
to leave.
It's not always, I don't think it always has to do with tax. I think it has to do with greed, right? I mean, somebody paying US taxes living in Bangladesh, that's just immoral, right? That's just pure greed. And that's what we have, though. And they don't really care. And I think you made the point they don't care, that they don't care. But, you know, that's basically the truth. It's greed. And it's really, you know, it gets down to this. I used to deal with the government as well in one of my jobs, and I understood how government budgets work, and like DOD or State Department. And they'll sit together and they have to come up with some sort of calculation on, I need to pay for what I want to buy, or I want a tax cut I want to give, or whatever it is. And they sit down with their JCT and they put their information together and they really optimize it, tweak it, and get to that number that they need to get to. And what they do, if they have an undefined source of income, like an American abroad who's not in the census, you don't know how many there are, and you could say that they're all gazillionaires. And if we collect 0.2% of those gazillionaires' taxes that they're cheating us from, that will get us to our budget. And that's what they're using this for. and that's bad. And the reason why they could do that is because the general public looks at us like a bunch of evading whatever criminal people that are love it or leave it or unpatriotic or whatever we are. We're an easy target for them. And as long
Greg,
as that happens,
I can ask you a question right now after having heard this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry to have to ask this, but Greg, do you live outside the United States to cheat the U.S. of taxes?
No. Why? You know, that's another point. Why would anybody ever live in Germany or Switzerland to cheat taxes? I mean, faceplant.
It's hard
insane.
To believe.
Or Canada.
Oh,
or
my
Canada.
God. All these tax evading U.S. citizens who come to Canada to pay higher Canadian taxes. Absolutely.
It's insanity.
Idea is that the United States thinks that all taxes should be paid only to the United States. Maybe they're upset about the idea of Americans leaving and paying taxes to other countries. Do you think it's that?
I just think that they would love to steal the taxes that we pay to our local country is basically what they have before, haven't they?
Well, you know, Greg, so. That is the trend. That's 21st century taxation, because if you look at things like the exit tax, GILTI transition tax, the net investment income tax, PFIX, all these are essentially preemptive tax strikes, right? Against, you
exactly.
know,
it foreign is. Foreign it countries. Is.
So, you know, they make no mistake about it. I mean, the U.S. tax code is waging war 24/7 against the tax base of other countries.
Right. And it's just a game of who could tax it sooner or first or whatever, and it's tax base erosion. So you know, and that's fine for a rich country like Switzerland. I talk to Swiss government people all the time, and they know it. They don't like it, but they know it. But if you go to a poor country and you're as the richest country in the world, stealing money out of their tax base, which is exactly what the U.S. government's doing, that is immoral. It is immoral. And I, as an American citizen, I don't care if I'm living abroad or not, it makes me want to vomit. And that is just cruel. So that's a message that I think that we need. You know, FATCA implementation was paid for by bank customers to implement. And you've got people making $100 a month paying for U.S. law to be implemented in their country. That is sick. It is sick. And it makes me as an American embarrassed. What they're doing with the accidental Americans is another one. It's just horrendous.
Let me ask you this, Greg. I mean, obviously, you're totally preaching to the converted or the quiet. Probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, when you say these things, okay. But, you know, you put these things very, very well. What I find most interesting about, say, the accidental situation is that, I mean, it's one thing to start off that way if they didn't foresee the consequences, but this has now been going on for something like 12 years or 11 and a mm-hmm. half years or something like this. Right. And they seem to have no interest at all in fixing the situation. Why do you think that is?
I think, I don't know, John, I really don't know. But I think FATCA is set up, and maybe it's a little bit conspiracy theorist, what I'm about ready to say. It's set up as a one-way street on purpose. And I hear this from the Swiss bankers all the time. They're saying that the U.S. is now the new Switzerland because of FATCA. Because if you want to hide money, you're a Swiss person, you want to hide money anywhere in the world, U.S. And they'll tell you that, right? It's a one-way street. They left certain things open in the Patriot Act where you could put money in, like real estate, which, you know, I'm not going to mention a certain New York congresswoman who has an interest in that. And then you have anonymous corporations. You have 10, and you basically set it up for dark money laundering. and that's the way it's working. So I don't know if they would ever really want to join something more multilateral like CRS or an exchange, a real fair exchange. No, they want a data dump, and they want to nail anything that smells American abroad and make the only safe haven for tax evasion or money laundering in the U.S. That's what I think it is.
Well, I think there's absolutely no question about it. There's no question about it. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, so FACA gives them an excuse to not join the CRS, but FACA also guarantees that they're not going to be reporting on, you know, the bank accounts or whatever, you know, to those other countries. So it's an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, let's go back to the Kennedy administration. I mean, that's what they were trying to do back then, too. Bring everything in. You know, give them a free ride to come on in. But anything outside, let's punish it. And it kind of goes along with the same trend. And I find it, you know, at the very least corrupt, if not more. But that's basically, you know, when you hear from the Treasury that they're not using the data at all, they don't need to use the data. They don't have to. They just set up a system to be able to hide. And, you know, that's my conspiracy theory. You know, I feel like I'm Alex Jones right now, but I really kind of feel that way. That's the way it looks. And I think that's been the effect of it. That part of it, I could say more factual. And it really, that's what's ended up happening. You go around the United States. I went to Ohio a few years ago, downtown Ohio. There's a building that's completely empty, owned by some oligarch. A huge building, and you can tell that's the real estate input, anonymous corporation. Somebody bought it and just laundered money, you know. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So, you know, as long as the Americans put up with that, they go along with the rhetoric that they're actually after some Texas billionaire hiding money in the Bahamas, and that's what they're really after, and they have to have everybody's data to do that. As long as they buy that, as long as they never question it, as long as the Senate Finance Committee doesn't do oversight over it, it's going to continue.
Well, maybe they just figure that, you know, money laundering is going to go on somewhere, sometime anyway, so you might as well go on in the U.S. Maybe that's the answer.
Could be. Why not?
I mean, you know, the thing is totally ridiculous. But, you know, another thing, back to the point of, I mean, basically the principle, it seems to me, is they want to attract foreign capital to the U.S., right?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with it. So it's 1966, right? They create the, you know, what was the genesis of the exit tax, right?
Right.
If you look at the evolution of the expatriation rules and the taxes over the years, I mean, what this is a clear attempt to, you know, reward, you know, non-U.S. persons for bringing money to the United States and punish any American citizen who tries to get the same benefits, right?
Or even punish the American citizen that is trying to make money outside the U.S.
Well, that too. So that's interesting. So the whole issue here, the genesis of this, I mean, we're really talking about various aspects of this citizenship taxation stuff or various consequences of it, right? Now, so people are becoming, at least people who live outside the United States, are understandably upset about citizenship mm-hmm. taxation. And to come back to this, they say, we want RBT. And I agree with you that that sounds more like a slogan, okay, than anything that's descriptive of anything. So what is mm-hmm. it that should be the goal here anyway?
I think at this point, RBT, CBT, just throw them out as terms. What we're really after is I have German neighbors that have foreign kids also next door to me. I want my kids to have the same opportunity as they do. I want them to have the exact same level of responsibilities that they do. I don't want them to have any more than that. I want them to be equal. I want them to have equal opportunity. And as long as the U.S. is doing that to us, we will not have equal opportunity. And that's why I really like what was written up in 1978, because that really basically explains it. It says, an American living abroad should not be disadvantaged to other peers internationally. We should not have opportunities taken away from us that other people have, our peers. And as long as we have this system, we will have that not be the case. So my message is, I don't care what you call it. I don't care what you call it. I want to live as free as a German does. I want to live as free as a French person does, or an Indian, or a North Korean living out of their country, or a Chinese person, or a Russian. It doesn't matter. Every one of them have an advantage over us, every single one of them. And we're hurting not just ourselves with that, we're hurting the homeland. Because if we're hurting outside of the US, we're not trading well, we're not exporting well, we're not doing the things that they do well. And I see it every time I go to a trade show. It's full of Chinese people with very few Americans there. And so as long as we keep doing that, as long as we keep making it hard for Google to give that job open in London to an American and instead giving it to a French person, as long as we have that, we're hurting the whole country. So whatever this little scheme or stuff is that Congress is doing or using us for, it is never going to be worth it to what we're losing. We are losing as a country a ton. And that's my feeling about it. And I see it all the time. I saw it when I worked for Kodak, when we had people that built the name of Kodak around the world, third best brand in the world, and they have their expat program canceled because of the US tax thing. And that job, that lucrative job where we gained a lot of knowledge, went to a German.
Sorry, Greg, can you repeat that and describe with a little more particularity an expat
program? You're making me repeat the whole thing?
No. Say that again. The cluster of words, expat program canceled or something.
Yeah, there's two types of Americans working overseas. So you have somebody that comes over working as an expat package that's sent over from their company, right? That's what we used to have a lot more of until we got taxed out of it. Then you have the local hire, like me. I was a local hire. I was basically like a German or a Swiss person or a French person, and they just hired me off the street. The people that we used to send over in the companies were people that were moving up in the companies. They needed to get international exposure or whatever. And some of them stayed and they just worked in different geographies because it was great to develop markets. And we used to be the best in the world at this. And we used to have people that were so good at it. They built Coca-Cola, IBM, Ford, you know, all these big name companies. They built those brands up. Those were Americans doing that. And over the tax system, over the years, we made it more and more risky and more expensive to send Americans abroad like that. So we ended up killing that. Very few companies do it now. It happens sometimes, but more than likely, that job opportunity for an American multinational in Paris, it won't be available for an American to have. That will go to another nationality. And that's where, just because of nationality. I mean, I've talked to HR people, and one thing I wanted to do with the Purple Expat before I killed it is I wanted to start doing surveys with HR people and asking them if they, you know, basically discriminate against American citizens when they talk about international jobs. But they do. I know they do because I've sat down and talked to them about it. And they don't openly say it because it should be illegal, but it is discrimination, but they're forced to discriminate. And then they're forced to discriminate because of all the cost, all the risk, all the pain of hiring an American in those jobs. So those job opportunities are taken away from them. It's really sad.
It's pretty clear that U.S. citizenship is a disability in the 21st century.
Right. It is.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, and all because of, this expansive regulatory regime, you know, which is largely the tax thing, but, you know, I think also expands beyond that. Amazing
stuff. All those laws that they developed, they were just reactionary. And you know, the guy from Facebook who renounces citizenship. Oh my God, now we have to change everything, you know?
He paid a huge exit tax.
Whatever. I mean, but the whole rhetoric
about
it just blows up. You know, it's just like the two movie stars in Monaco, you know, with the Kennedys. It just blows up. It happens once or twice and people freak out about it. They're outraged. And they start writing more and more laws to punish people, everybody. And that's what we live with right now. So the question is...
So it's as though the mentality of America is that nobody ought to be able to leave the United States to get a benefit that you wouldn't have if you were inside the United States. Maybe that's the mentality, do you think?
Well, you know, back in the early 70s, I had people in my family, an extended family, that they were in the oil business, and they went over to Iran to lay pipeline. They made a ton of money. They brought back that money to Oklahoma, and they opened businesses. And today, that doesn't work. They can't do it anymore. Today they're so limited through the regulations you're talking about, or, you know, keeping some guy from cheating somewhere, that didn't happen anymore. So you don't have it like you have in other countries, a certain dynamic and freedom of movement and people profiting from that and helping your country. You've eliminated it. You made it very difficult. They make it more and more difficult all the time. So what you're saying about that has an impact on the standard of living or the lives that people have back home.
Oh, it certainly does. Us. You know, I mean, when I was very young growing up, you know, I had this perception, I think, which was probably more true than not, that North America, Canada, United States, whatever, were, you know, economically better off. You know, the people were economically better off than in perhaps Europe and certainly Asia, et cetera. And, you know, I think now it's a complete reversal. You know, you exactly. Fly to Asia, you've got this brand new airport, incredible infrastructure. You come right. Back to North America, it's a hellhole.
You know, John, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was just thinking about this morning. I was in Pennsylvania a few years ago, and I was driving down the highway, and I looked to the right side, and there's this factory that's been abandoned, rusty, everything. And then I drive a little bit further, and I see another one. And I started thinking to myself, when do I ever see that in Switzerland? I never see that in Switzerland. I never see that in Germany. I never see that, well, maybe the eastern part of Germany where the communists used to be, but you never hardly see that in Europe like that. And you have to wonder what happens. And I have there's a friend of mine that owns a small manufacturing company not far from here, and he exports to India, to all these other places. They export. And I wonder if that manufacturing facility in Pennsylvania, if they had the talent to be able to export, if they could have pivoted their business somehow and kept it going. Because that's what the Swiss do. That's what the Germans do. That's what everybody else does.
But it's and not what the Americans do.
Not what the Americans do, because we don't have the expertise anymore. We killed it. And I really mean that. I think the Democrats believe that the U.S. Trade Representative is the ultra salesperson for all products in the United States. And that's not what she does. That's not what she does.
No, it's obvious.
And there's Americans that need to get out there and do it. And until you do that, until you regain that expertise, we're not gonna, you know, those companies are not going to have any flexibility to be able to survive.
So to close the loop, I mean, I think what you are saying is that until these tax rules change, that's not going to happen.
Right. Exactly. So, and it's really sad if you don't do that. I mean, there's people back home suffering from this.
Absolutely. I mean, it's as though, you know, there's, as you may know, I'm a fan of this great book by Charles Adams, Taxes for Good and Evil, the Rise and Fall of Civilizations, you know, in terms of taxation. And, you know, his point is that if you look through history, you know, basically tax systems killed countries. And we're right. Seeing it with the United States. I mean, I think there's absolutely no question about it. I mean, right. We're, you know, even if you are not living outside the United States, I mean, it's an archaic tax system, right, that's rooted in well in the last century, right?
They don't repeal anything. They just pile onto it.
Well, there was one law they did repeal, actually. Now, you know, to go to your 1978 law, yeah, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, that was repealed in 1982, interestingly.
Yeah. I saw that this morning, you wrote that. What was the history behind them repealing that? That's
don't know. Don't know. I just found the law. It was, well, it was repealed in a broader piece of legislation. It was getting rid of obsolete provisions. So I probably what happened was that the 78 law required the president to put together some kind of report and actually investigate these things. And yeah, in 1982, it was repealed. So then we had the Reagan administration that probably didn't want to be bound by anything, you know, that came out of the Carter administration. But I think it's kind of funny because on its face, the idea that Americans abroad should not be discriminated against is an obsolete notion.
It's interesting, isn't it? But, you know, to get back to the thing about messaging, I don't think anybody could disagree with that point. I mean, just to say, if they say Americans abroad, just specifically Americans abroad, let's go talk to, you know, the redneck in Oklahoma where I grew up and say, look, you know, do you believe Americans should be treated worse when they leave worse than everybody else if they leave the country? And more than likely, they're going to say, no, that's not right. We're Americans. We should be treated at least equal, right? We just want equal footing. That's something I think is agreeable to everybody. I mean, if they don't believe that, then I'm sorry. I need to renounce because I don't want to be part of that country.
I think that on balance they would believe that. Okay, the problem comes from legislatures who don't understand it and people in Treasury who do understand it and want to perpetuate it, right? I mean, right. I think it's largely that most people would not even believe what we're talking about. They would not believe that, you know, I mean, first of all, you've asked the first question. Do you think if an American citizen doesn't live in the United States, they should be taxed by the United States? Probably a majority would say, nah, that doesn't seem reasonable. But follow up with a second question. Do you believe that an American who lives outside the United States and earns money outside the United States should be taxed even worse than an American who does live in the United States? I mean, they would think that you were hallucinating, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they wouldn't. But even the level of opportunity, for example, if my son wanted to go co-found a startup, shouldn't an American citizen be able to do that just like a German citizen does?
But they're American, right? Shouldn't they be subject to special, you know, to whom much has been given?
We're not even talking about that. We're talking about even doing it. We're talking about it is eliminated from his perspective in life.
That's right.
And so, you know, would an American citizen go along with that? Anybody that's really a true blue, maybe I don't understand the U.S. anymore, but to me, that seems fundamentally against what we stand for. And that's something that I think people should stand up and say, That's something that we agree with. And then we can start having a discussion, where is the discrimination happening and why is it happening? And then I think we have a little bit more better of an audience. But we running around saying RBT and it's just not going to work and it's going to get hijacked. And
well, it is being hijacked, clearly.
It is hijacked. Let's be honest. It really is.
Greg, you know what? This is great. And I think that we should probably do a continue this discussion with perhaps a podcast too.
Okay.
Are you up for that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. So let's call for today because, I mean, I'm going to be brutally honest here. It's 8:00 and I have a meeting in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I need to run too.
So I'm going to have to sign off for now, but I really appreciate the conversation. I'd like to pick it up from this point. You know, we can talk, you know, perhaps with the theme of what should be the messaging that you know, one needs to get out, et cetera. So maybe consider that and we'll pick this up, you know, in the next few days or something. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Let me know.
All right. And so I'm speaking with Greg Swanson in Switzerland, and I believe the purpleexpat.org site is still up, isn't it?
It's not up. It will be up again in a little bit.
It will come up at some point. Yeah. Well,
I've been a little bit busy.
Ray's written some great articles on Medium and, you know, here, there, and everywhere, and it's on Twitter. So, anyway, great stuff. And thank you for all your
thanks for having me on, John. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll pick this up later. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.